Good morning. I love to hear all the voices. It means that people are engaging with one another this morning. I'm glad each one of you are here in this space of Martin Chapel. Let's enjoy it together. Please stand with me. We're going to start off singing Kumbaya, which means come by here. And we invite God to come by here and sing with us. And yeah, keep on coming in. There's some seats up front here too, if you're looking for some seats.
In. If you have seats open next to you, if you'd just raise your hands, that'll help people find the chairs. And sitting along the side over here in front of the window, stained glass window works beautifully. Or on the floor right up front. This morning, as we gather with Tony and Becky Brenneman, we are remembering the day when many of us, not all of us here, but many of us here heard that Tony fell from Crabtree Falls, a very serious fall and serious injuries involving head and other body parts. And then the notices of weeks of uncertainty as to what it would mean, these injuries, death, life, quality of life, a lot of prayer support and a journey toward healing. But we don't, most of us don't know much more than that, and so today Becky and Tony have agreed to share this journey with us. Tony is structural supervisor for physical plant. Now, is that the old name? Is it facilities management now? So the directory needs to be updated, because I got that right from the directory, whoever's in charge of that. And Becky, SIS programmer and RPT specialist for information systems. I have no idea what that means. Members at Zion Mennonite Church, and they have two sons, and then also their daughter Sarah Halteman, who is here and works on campus as administrative assistant in the education department. We welcome you, we honor your story and your journey, and we're honored to be with you today.
I just want to have a short prayer before we start. Father, may the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you today. You are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Our journey over the past months is really God's story, not our story. So as we share, look for ways that God was at work in our lives and the lives of those around us.
February 7th, 2015, is the day I had a serious fall of hiking trail. This was the first hike I had taken with my friend Grant Stalsfus since having a knee replaced. We had hiked 8 miles past Crabtree Falls to the top of a mountain called The Priest. We were 1 mile up the mountain, returning to my SUV. I lost my footing on icy rock, fell and rolled about 40 feet down the side of a mountain, hitting my head on rocks, trees, and being stopped against a very large tree. The last memory I have for 3 weeks was slipping on that rock. I don't remember the fall at all. Grant heard me fall, and he turned around and saw me rolling, head and heels, down the mountain. After making his way down to where I lay, he rolled me over and saw that I was unconscious. My eyes were rolled back at my head. Blood was running out of both ears. He realized very quickly that this was a very serious situation. He was all alone, and he had no phone service. The first person to walk by was a UVA nursing student. She came down, kneeled on the ground, held my head in her hands for 2 hours until the rescue personnel arrived. The next hiker was an EMT who came down to help. Other hikers threw their coats down from the trail to below where we were to help keep me warm because it was cold. No one had phone reception. But they soon heard someone yell at them from the trail, "The call has been made." That's what the voice said. This person was never seen nor talked to. We have tried several times since, and no one's phone ever had service up there. 2 rescue teams came, one down from the top of the mountain and one up from the bottom. They decided to take me 1 mile down. Because of the ice and the steep slope, the stretcher I was on was tied to ropes and were wrapped around trees to let me down the mountain. I was placed in a rescue vehicle and driven 4 miles up the mountain to a place where a helicopter could land. The flight to UVA Hospital was not very long, but it took over 4 hours from the time of my fall to my entering the emergency room.
On Saturday, the day of Tony's fall, my daughter-in-law, who lives in Pittsburgh, texted both my daughter Sarah and I and said, "You guys are on my mind today. Is everything okay?" Of course, at the time, we thought everything was okay. It was only later, when Sarah reminded me of that text, that I realized God was already working to prompt others to begin holding us up in prayer. I received the call at about 6:30 on Saturday evening that Tony had been injured while hiking. He was being airlifted to UVA Hospital, and that he was in and out of consciousness. I called some close friends and briefly told them what I knew and asked if they would drive me to UVA. Just as we passed the first Waynesboro exit on 64, I received a call from the social worker at UVA asking if I knew my husband had been brought into the trauma unit. I said, yes, I knew, and we were on our way there. She said the surgeon wanted to talk to me and would be calling soon. Just as we crested the top of Afton Mountain, my phone rang again, and it was the surgeon. He didn't mince words at all. He said Tony was bleeding significantly from his skull, and it was putting pressure on his brain, and that if they didn't do surgery immediately, he would die. And then he went on to list all the bad things that could happen if they did surgery, and concluded by saying, but it's his best chance. That was the first I realized just what kind of injuries Tony had. I expected broken arms and legs, and he must have hit his head because he was in and out of consciousness. But really, I had no clue it was this bad. I didn't see Tony when we arrived at the hospital. He was being prepped for surgery. The surgery took about 2 hours, and the nurse called me when it was over and said the surgeon wanted to talk to me. We went up to the third floor, to the neuro intensive care unit, and I saw that one of the elders from our church was there with her husband, who was a family physician. The nurse met me and said I could bring one other person in with me. I looked around the circle of people who were there, and I said, I want the doctor to go with me. So he went along in and was able to ask appropriate questions and interpret what the surgeon was saying. I was so grateful for his presence, and I knew that God had gone before me and arranged that. My mom found out about Tony's fall the next day on Sunday morning, and I talked to her by phone on Sunday evening. She said to me, Becky, last night I just had this heavy feeling, prayed for all of you. Now I know what that was about. The Spirit had prompted her, and she obeyed, even not knowing what the situation was. In those early days, my dear friend Joy Yoder sent me a text message every morning with a Bible verse and some encouraging words. Each morning, when I was trying to gather up my courage to walk back into that hospital, it was so nice to know that someone was thinking of me and praying for me. That might seem like a small, insignificant thing, but to me it was huge and just the encouragement I needed. On Tuesday of that first week, I came down from ICU to take a little break, and I encountered Elaine Clymer, a woman from my church who was in the lobby. I knew she had been struggling with some significant health issues. She had just received a devastating diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, which had spread to her liver. And we embraced there in the lobby, shed some tears together, and tried to comfort each other. During the weeks that followed, I never got to see her again, but she posted words of encouragement on Tony's Caring Bridge website several times, even though she was undergoing her own health crisis. She passed away a couple weeks after Tony returned from the hospital, and I never got to thank her for her words of encouragement. Tony's brother Tim, who's with us today, in fact, lives in South Georgia, and he called me during the first week of Tony's hospitalization. He wanted to come and see Tony, but wanted to come at a time that worked for me. I told him that the coming weekend, there would be a lot of people there. I knew my kids were coming back, but that the following weekend, I didn't think anyone was going to be around. So even though I knew he didn't want to wait a whole week, he agreed to come the following weekend. He arrived on Thursday afternoon of Tony's second week at UVA, and the next morning, Friday morning, we were informed that Tony would be moved to Washington, D.C. that very afternoon. Tim was right there at my side and able to drive me to D.C. and stay for the weekend to help get Tony settled in. There is no way I could have planned that because I didn't know in advance that it would happen. But I was provided for, and there was no need to make any phone calls and try to arrange for anyone to accompany me. God knew and had everything already arranged. Sunday of that first week in D.C., I got a call from my next-door neighbor. He and some other neighbors were in my driveway plowing the snow that had fallen that weekend. I was so grateful for this and all the many other expressions of care that we received the following months. The third week after the accident, which would have been Tony's first week in D.C., I had an email conversation with my sister-in-law and wrote these words. Someone asked me if I had anyone staying with me at night when I'm home, and really, the thought hadn't even occurred to me. I feel so at peace when I'm at home. That first night this week when I went to bed, I just had this picture of an angel with a flaming sword standing guard outside each of my doors. It was so real that the next morning, I actually went to the door to see if there were tracks in the snow. I hold that image in my mind every evening when I go to bed, and I feel peaceful and safe. And really, I don't ever remember feeling any fear on those nights when I was staying at home alone. I really do believe there were angels guarding me. I remember driving home alone from D.C. for the first time. It was Monday evening. I had spent the day with Tony in the hospital, meeting the therapists and going over care plans. I left the hospital about 7:30 p.m. for the drive home. I'm a bit intimidated by big city driving, so I was concerned about finding my way out of the city. My son and I had reviewed the route I'd need to take on Google Maps before I left. I remember the feeling of relief when I got to 64 and passed the Vienna Metro stop because I knew the way from there. Several times on that solitary drive home, I almost broke down and wept from the sheer enormity of the situation, from fatigue, and from the uncertainty of the future. I kept saying, "Girlfriend, you're driving right now. Just hold it together until you get home." And I did. I remember pulling into my driveway and just sobbing. I walked into the house. My friends were there with a fire in the wood stove, warm soup in a pot, and a shoulder to cry on, and loving hugs. I was exhausted, but I also felt very cared for. I didn't want Tony to be alone in D.C. in a strange place, so it was arranged that someone would stay with him every day he was there. Family members covered most of the first week, and church friends volunteered to come up the second week. There was always someone there with him during the day when I couldn't be there. We had more volunteers than we had days to fill. After they assessed Tony's situation, the rehab hospital told me that they expected Tony's stay to be 3 weeks. So I planned to take off work the entire third week so I could be at the hospital learning about his therapy so I could continue that at home. In the middle of the second week, they called me to say that Tony was doing so well, they were going to release him that weekend on Saturday. So I scrambled to change my plans. Ron Stolzfus had been planning to come up on Saturday for the day, so he and my daughter Sarah drove up in a van and brought Tony and I home. We arrived to a plowed driveway. It had snowed again. Warm food and balloons and lots of hugs. We were weary but so glad to be home and not have the need to drive back and forth to the city again. About a month after Tony came home from the hospital, I had a day where everything just seemed to come crashing in on me and I felt like I was losing it. I called my friend, Brenda Fairweather, and told her I was falling apart. She and her husband, Bobby, came over. Bobby stayed with Tony and Brenda took me out to Sweet Frog, where we talked and laughed and ate frozen yogurt and just did something normal for a little while. She helped me get my feet back under me so I could go home and keep doing it. And in June, Bobby came and stayed with Tony the entire weekend so Brenda could take me to Smith Mountain Lake for the weekend to just have a couple days to rest and get away from the responsibility for a while. During Tony's recovery, I have seen him working harder than anyone I've ever known. He was determined to come back as far as possible. He doggedly did his exercises several times every day. Gradually, I encouraged him to begin doing other things to assist his recovery, like building birdhouses in his shop, getting back on his bike, and riding miles and miles around the church parking lot next door. and taking short hikes together after his therapy sessions at Augusta Medical Center. I felt like it was important for him to begin doing normal things in a familiar setting to bring back as much memory and skill as possible. We were blessed by the way our adult children stepped in and helped us during this time of crisis. Sarah was facing a serious health crisis of her own during this time, so she was carrying a double burden. She made quite a number of initial phone calls and contacts that first night while I was headed to the hospital, and I know those were difficult calls to make. Sarah and both of our sons, one from Pittsburgh and one from DC, came immediately the next day, stayed several days, returned several times to support me and be with their dad. And once Tony was moved to DC, our son stopped by every evening after work for several hours and spent the entire day with Tony on his days off. In an early conversation with my mom, when I was talking about returning to normal, she told me that things would probably always be different now, but that didn't mean they would be bad. At the time, I didn't want to hear that. I just wanted things to return to normal, whatever that was. But she was right. I know now that things will always be different, and that's not bad. We are forever changed by this experience. I feel like we had the privilege of having a front row seat to see God at work in countless ways. So we continue the journey back. Some days seem almost normal, but there are other times that we are clearly reminded that things are different. We value our time together and hope we still have many years to share life together. But I know now that there is a strength available in times of crisis that goes beyond human understanding. Even on that first day, I felt like something came up underneath me and just held me up. I've learned that God can absolutely be trusted, and that it is really true that He will never leave us or forsake us. I've learned that being part of God's community of believers means that others will come alongside us and help hold us up and bear our burdens so that we don't need to journey alone. We received a huge outpouring of support, prayers, financial gifts, food, cards, words of encouragement, help with transportation to appointments, caregivers to come be with Tony so I could begin returning to work, and just lots of love and care. This is not an experience I would ever wish on anyone, and yet we are better people for having walked through it. And I've learned that God is a God of resurrection. He turns death into life. He is a mighty redeemer who can take a devastating event and turn it into something holy. Praise be to God.
The last 21 months have been a powerful learning experience. I've learned about recovery from brain injury. My physical recovery is well ahead of what was expected. The 125 therapy sessions, my determination to work and exercise routine have helped. I'm currently comfortable working 30 hours a week. My goal is to be at 40 hours a week by January the 1st. Much have been learned about the values of friendship and the power of God. I'd like to thank the EMU community for all their support and all they have given. This basket here of cards
is from people. See all these cards? You get cards from people at church. It's all over. These are notes from people in our church, many of them children, you sent me and I got it collected at church.
This past year, as we were preparing for time to share for the 1th anniversary of our fall, I was listening to a CD I had not listened to for several years. As the last song, which I had forgotten was even there, started playing, I was brought to tears. It was a song, "Somebody Prayed" by Ricky Skaggs. I felt it was written for me. There are words on it such as my darkest hour. And one says my pillow was a stone, which mine literally was a stone for one afternoon. We created a slideshow to go along with this song. And we want to close today by sharing it with you today. The first slides are just of me and my hobbies. This is one of them here. And the other one, you'll see pictures of all my junk I used to do this with. There are pictures that show the hospitals, the two hospitals where I stayed, as well as friends cutting wood in our yard, getting our wood supply for that winter. There are pictures of things I did for recovery, building birdhouses, biking, hiking. When you see a group of people standing in front of a van, this is one of the pictures you'll see, there's nine of us standing there. This is the start of our hike 1 year ago, last week, I think, when we returned to the site of the accident. After seeing the 1 mile marker that you'll see a picture of, you'll see several pictures of us looking down to where the fall happened. We stopped there and spent a little time there. You'll see us there. Some of the pictures aren't that great, but they're us down the mountain or looking down the mountain. This day was a very healing experience for all involved. The last picture, which I asked Matt to keep on when we're done a little bit, was made by my 7-year-old grandson almost 1 year after the fall. It was his idea to draw the picture, no adult asked him to draw it. It is his interpretation of the event that day. Thanks a lot for everyone who came today, shared part of this, and listened to the words of this powerful song as we play it.
Somebody's praying, I can feel it. Somebody's praying for me. Mighty hands are guiding me to protect me from what I can't see. Lord, I believe. Lord, I believe somebody's praying for me. Angels are watching, I can feel it. Angels are watching over me. There's many miles ahead till I get home. Still I'm safely kept before your throne. 'Cause Lord, I believe. Lord, I believe your angels are watching over me. Well, I've walked the barren wilderness where my pillow was a stone, and I've been through the darkest caverns where no light has ever shone. For those people praying all this time for me. Somebody's praying, I can feel it. Somebody's praying for me. Mighty hands are guiding me to protect me from what I can't see. Lord, I believe. Lord, I believe. Somebody's praying for me. Somebody's praying for me.
Well, what can we say but thanks be to God, and thanks be to a caring, faith-filled community of friends and colleagues. Thank you so much for opening your story for us. Let's we celebrate the journey, and you've been given a testimony. Keep sharing it.